Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with José Vuillemo. How are you, José?
Very fine, thank you.
Excellent, excellent. You wrote a book called The Wine Grapes. It was with Genesis, but you're the man who did the DNA fingerprinting. You know, the man who got in there with a white lab coat and did the hard yards. And I wanted to talk a wee bit about DNA fingerprinting, if we can, and specifically for grapes, and just get an update on really on where we're at, where we've been, and where we're heading with it in terms of technological developments. But before we get into that, something that some people don't quite understand, and I went to a presentation you gave earlier about clones and differences between crossing and parentage and all that sort of stuff. Can you just give us the 10,000 feet version of how you get your clones and are they different and all that sort of stuff?
Okay, well, first of all, I did not do all the DNA analysis that is in wine grapes. Of course, I did a lot of them, but I also gathered the information from all of my colleagues mm-hmm. around the world. So I did not do everything myself.
Yep.
I'm just putting everything up together. So you need to ask yourself a very simple question. What is a grape variety? It is not so simple in the answer, because if you ask a wine grower, what are Pinot Gris, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Noir? He will answer three different grape varieties. And I say no, and the geneticist says no. It's one and the same grape variety that has had some biological accidents called mutation. And when these mutations are spectacular to the human eye, like changing of the berry color, they put it aside. So this makes it a clone of the variety. And when you have very old varieties, you multiply them by cuttings or layering, you increase the chances to have an accumulation of these mutations. And every single mutation that is visually impressive is described as a clone. And all these clones together build up the grape variety. At the starting point, there was one single grape pip that grew into a plant that was selected, which means that every single grape variety has two parents, like us.
Yep.
Every single grape variety has a father and a mother. So seeing these clones together building up the grape variety, it is important to think and to know that all these clones, when you do the DNA profile, will have more or less the same DNA profile. So when you do the DNA profile of one grape variety, you don't see the differences between the clones, but you see the differences between the grape varieties. That was the starting point. The first DNA analysis in grapes was done in 1993 in Australia at the Xairo Research Center. And later on, a few years later, in California at UC Davis, John Bowers, who was the PhD student of Professor Carol Meredith, was starting to apply this DNA profiling technique to the grape collection at UC Davis to sort out the grape, to check the identity of the individuals, and maybe to find synonyms and maybe discard some of them, because it takes place and it means money to maintain alive those plants. Doing this, John Bowers realized that some of the grape varieties had similar DNA profiles. So he started to look at human genetics and human parentage analysis with a lot of statistics. And he thought brilliantly, well, could we do the same with grape varieties? Which he did. And in 1997, he published a brilliant paper together with his professor Carol Meredith, revealing the parentage of Cabernet Sauvignon. And the parents are Cabernet Franc and Sauvignon Blanc.
So it doesn't actually fall out directly from the DNA itself. You've got to do statistical analysis to work out the parentage.
Yeah, and also to identify a grape. If you want to be 100% scientific, if you give me a grape leaf, you don't know the identity of the variety. I do the DNA analysis. Then I compare it to my database, and comparing the profile, I see that at each of the the number, we have numbers. Markers. Or the bars, it corresponds, for example, to Sangiovese. I can tell you you have Sangiovese, but scientifically, I should tell you there is one chance out of 1 trillion that your sample is not Sangiovese.
Okay, it's something unique, but just looks like it.
This is statistically correct to say you are never 100% because of the statistics.
Yeah.
But one chance out of 1 trillion are numbers you see in astronomy and ampelography.
Okay, so that's sort of a brief history. How many of the grapevines in your book, The Wine Grapes, have actually been DNA fingerprinted?
I think more than half of it.
So we're up to about 700, are we?
Yeah.
Okay.
So total is almost 1,400, so 700 has been analyzed by the DNA profile. Most of the varieties in Italy, France, Germany have been analyzed with the DNA profile.
And the UK one as well?
Of course.
Which is Muscat Hamburg, is it?
Yeah, there is only one indigenous variety in the UK, which is Muscat of Hamburg. Because it was bred in the UK in the 19th century.
Yeah, no, we've got to get that one in there, our native grape variety. I don't think it's even grown here.
No, it's not.
No.
at least not for wine. It's a very good table grape. You can eat it. If you go to a supermarket, many times you have Muscat of Hamburg that is sold as table grape. It's very good to eat.
Oh, okay. I thought it was Concord they were selling and things like that.
Oh, Concord is a different animal.
Yeah, it makes table grapes as well.
Yeah.
Okay. And is it a white grape or a red grape?
No, it's red.
Okay, so...
Red.
Okay, next time I get it, and I presume it's seeded as well as opposed to seedless.
Yeah.
So next time I get a seeded red grape, I'll be thinking Muscat de Hamburg.
Yeah, egg-shaped berries.
Oh, is it?
Very big.
Okay, I'll keep it.
Should be Muscat of Hamburg. Oh, but you know, don't trust supermarket for that.
Right.
In 98, colleagues of mine in Austria made a very nice and I would say funny scientific study. They purchased table grapes in supermarket. And they checked the identity of what was sold. 50% of them were wrong.
Really?
50%.
Oh my God, we've got a horse meat scandal. I don't think the consumer's going to be too worried, but
no,
okay.
No.
All right. No, that's interesting. That 50% was wrong. So I noticed when you're looking at sort of some of the parentage, there were question marks about which parents were which and all that sort of stuff. Assuming when all the DNA profiling's been done, will you be able to then go back through, do some statistical analysis, and then a lot of the parentage will fall out from that?
Speaking of Western Europe, the chances are very low for that because we have analyzed almost everything in existence. And these question marks represent grape varieties that are today probably extinct.
Okay.
They have disappeared. And it's like if you do your own genealogy, and you go up to your great-grandfathers, and at one point, the archives in this small village in Ireland have burned in the 17th century. You will never be able to go further than that.
Okay.
So it's the same thing with grape varieties. This question mark prevent us from going further high in the pedigree.
And you can't use statistics to sort of guesstimate what you think it would be and therefore guesstimate its parentage?
Oh, yes, you can. With the DNA profile, you can say which half of the DNA profile the variety must have to be the parent.
But
if it has disappeared, you will never know. There is a very nice story about that. It's the parentage of Merlot. I tell you this story because, unfortunately, it has not been well widespread in the written or audio press and medias. It has been discovered in 2009. The parentage of Merlot. One of the parents, no surprise, is Cabernet Franc.
Yeah.
We already knew that there was a direct relationship between Cabernet Franc and Merlot. But the second parent was missing. The question mark was missing. And my colleagues in France, in Montpellier, the research station at INRA, had found in 1996 a single vine in Brittany, northern France. And they analyzed it. It was not matching any known variety. They named it Vigne de Souliac. Souliac is the name of the village where they found it. And probably it was one of the remnants of the time when in Brittany they used to have vineyards.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it was less cold than today.
Yeah.
But now it has been abandoned, almost abandoned. But this vine was unknown to them. And several years later, they found the same vine in Charente. Charente is a region where they make cognac.
Okay, yep.
Four different old vines growing in front of farmhouses were the same identity of this vine in Brittany. They asked people there, what's the name of it? And they would say, well, we call it Madeleine, because it's usually ripe at Sainte Madeleine, which is July 22. But many different varieties are called Madeleine something. So they checked this variety against the large collection they have in southern France. It did not correspond to anything. So they named it Magdalene Noire de Charente. And they had to name it because going through the DNA analysis, they were able to show that this is the missing link. This is the parent of Merlot. Mm-hmm. So Merlot is a progeny, a natural progeny of a spontaneous cross between Cabernet Franc and this Magdalene Noire de Charente, which has survived in the form of five old vines in France and in the world.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. In 10 or 20 years from now, it might have disappeared.
Yeah.
And we would never know the parent of Merlot. We have no idea of the qualities of this grape. I know they are making some micro vinification to test what's the value of the grape, but it's a very nice story to emphasize the need to keep alive old vines, old varieties, because they help us understand where our favorite varieties come from. They help us to have a better knowledge of history and also to sell and drink wines better.
Where are we at? You've sort of said we've done about 700 grape varieties. The West has pretty much been fingerprinted away, and maybe, what is it, the Eastern Europe to go?
Yeah, there's a lot of work to do in Eastern Europe. They're starting to build a project to analyze their grape varieties. Also in the Near East, in 2006...
Well, like Turkey, or...?
Like Turkey. Turkey has done a lot of work. Actually, in 2006, I was the first scientist to apply the DNA profiling technique to Turkish, Georgian, and Armenian varieties. And since then, a few projects have been carried out in these countries, and we are starting to know better and better the ampelography in these countries in terms of genetics. But there is still a lot of work to do in order to reach the same knowledge level that we have in Western Europe.
Before DNA profiling, people used to look at things like the leaves and the grape sizes and things like that. And I remember when I first joined the wine trade 10 or so years ago, there was a classic one that Carmenera, or Merlot from Chile, was actually a lot of Carmenera, because they looked the same, but they might have made slightly different wines. Were there a lot of mistakes early on? And has DNA profiling meant that we got a lot more confident in what we're actually drinking now?
Oh yes, definitely. And I would say the new world is a good playground for grape geneticists, because introductions have come from all over the world, many different countries at different times, and sometimes you have labels that are mixed together, and then you have a labeling mistake. One of the most famous is the Mondeuse Noire, which is a variety from Savoie in France, and Refosco from Northern Italy. At the University of California in Davis, in the collection, they mixed the labels. And for a long time, they said that Mondeuse Noire and Refosco were the same grapes, just because they mixed the labels. I can tell them, and it has been told to them by Carol Meredith, that it is not the same grape variety. It's a sample mistake in the grape collection. But still, you can read articles or books saying that Mondeuse and Refosco are the same, which is not true. And there are a lot of stories like that in wine grapes that you can read.
Just a grape variety people talk about. A lot of people used to think that Albarino down in Galicia, Spanish Galicia, was a distant relation to Riesling. Any truth behind that?
Well, it is not related at all to Riesling.
Yep.
But I can see why. Albarino is well identified in Spain, but it was introduced in Australia,
yep,
under the name Albarino, and they were proud to cultivate and produce Albarino. And very recently, two or three years ago, they realized that their Albarino was not Albarino, and they were shocked. It was the end of the world for them, because it turned out to be Sauvignon. Sauvignon Blanc.
Oh, yeah.
And I said to them, well, that's fantastic news because Sauvignon Blanc is a fantastic grape variety making quality wines in many different countries. When you think that Sauvignon Blanc is exactly the same as Traminer. Traminer makes fantastic wines in Germany, in Austria, and also in Hungary and different countries. In France, under the name Sauvignon Blanc, or Sauvignon Jaune, it makes different wines. Sauvignon Blanc is used to make, Vin Jaune.
Yep, yep.
Chateau Chalon, for example. So it was good news for me. And I think they are starting to understand that they should keep this wrong Albarino because it is the true Sauvignon Blanc. And the wines are very good.
So not Sauvignon Blanc, but Sauvignon Blanc.
Sauvignon.
Not Sauvignon like...
Oh, not Sauvignon.
Not Sauvignon.
No, not Sauvignon.
Sauvignon.
Sauvignon. Yeah. Sauvignon Blanc.
And that's a very... There seems to be, looking at your book, there seem to be some grape varieties that were really old that seem to be like the parents of a lot. Like Gouy Blanc is one I was thinking of a lot when I was going through the genetic diagrams. I was going, never drunk that, but my God, that seems to be a key variety for Pinot Noir.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember, it's been a while since I looked at those things, but you know, what are the key sort of parent grape varieties that you think of?
Yeah, that's correct. You mentioned Gouy Blanc. This was also a nice story that was discovered by my professor, I can remember that, together with French colleagues, especially Jean-Michel Boursicot in Rennes, Montpellier. 1999, they found the parentage of several important grape varieties, including Chardonnay, Gamay, Aligoté, Melon, and so on. And taking the first two, Chardonnay and Gamay, they were able to show that they have the same parents. One of them is Pinot, no surprise. Same area, looking familiar. The other one was Gouy Blanc. They had almost never heard of it.
So just to get this right, Chardonnay's parents were Pinot, well, whatever.
Pinot,
whatever it is.
Yeah, whatever color, probably Noir.
Yeah, and then...
And the other parent was Gouy Blanc.
Gouy Blanc, yeah.
So Chardonnay has one red and one white parent, and it is white. Gamay has the same parent, and it is red. So it's like the color of the eyes. It can change from one brother to the other.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at this parentage, Chardonnay and Gamay are brothers, full siblings.
Yeah, yeah.
They have the same parents. And this particular parent, Gouy Blanc, was almost unknown to the researchers. So they made additional analysis and historical studies, and they found out that it used to be cultivated all over Western Europe under many different names. It has dozens of different names, different synonyms all over Europe. The most famous would be Hönisch in Germany. Hönisch, which probably comes from the Huns, the tribes of the Huns, and it used to be very widespread. And today we know that this Gouy Blanc is the father of at least 80 grape varieties in Western Europe. Among these 80, of course, you find Chardonnay, Gamay, but you also find Riesling. You also find Vormint, giving the fantastic Tokaj wines. Blaufränkisch, for example. A lot of them. So we nickname Gouy Blanc the Casanova of grape varieties because it has children in every country.
I like it. And you said Sauvignon Blanc was... I remember that being quite a key one as well.
Yeah. These key varieties, we call them the result of founder varieties. These are modern key varieties, but we strongly believe that varieties like Gouy Blanc, Sauvignon, Pinot have had a huge influence on the composition, on the diversity of what we drink today. And we came up in Wine Grapes with a new concept of founder grape varieties. And these founder grape varieties would be the ancestors of these Pinot, Gouy Blanc, and Sauvignon, and so on. And these founder varieties are only a limited number of varieties that were introduced probably from the Near East or from Greece or from Turkey, whatever. We have no evidence for that. And maybe some of them were domesticated from the wild grapes growing there. Probably in the Iberian Peninsula, the genetics of the Portuguese and Spanish grape varieties are so different, distinct than the rest of Europe, that we think it might have been locally domesticated from local wine grapes. It has changed our mind in terms of where do the grapes come from, what are the relationships. In the book, we have one huge pedigree, including 156 different grape varieties from Western Europe that are connected with parent-offspring relationships. That means we have a huge family of Western Europe grape varieties that all stem from a very small number of founder varieties. That's a new concept in our book, Wine Grapes.
I think we're going to wrap it up there, but I'm quite interested to find out a bit more about the technology behind DNA fingerprinting, which we'll talk about next week. Thank you very much.
Thank you.